Las Vegas, famous, fabulous playground of the West. A wide open town that never goes to sleep.
Vegas!
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
You're either in or you're out. Right now.
My best mates are going to Las Vegas this weekend. I'm told it's incredible.
Las Vegas, here we go!
Pack your bags
and get ready for a different kind of Vegas experience with someone who knows Vegas inside and out. You're listening to Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
Las Vegas and Elvis Presley, the names go together, there's no question about it, and they really helped each other a lot. There's a fantastic book about it, it's called Elvis in Vegas, How the King Reinvented the Las Vegas Show by the great author Richard Zoglin, who writes for Time Magazine, and also wrote a fantastic book about Bob Hope. Richard, it really was a case that Elvis really needed Vegas at that point in his career, and really, as it turns out, Vegas sort of needed him.
Yeah, the 1960s were kind of a tough time for Elvis. He had not done any live performing through the entire 1960s except for a couple of benefit performances in 1961. Colonel Parker, his manager, just decided he would be making movies and recording. And as the rock world was changing, the Beatles came along and everything, Elvis was really nowhere. He was considered sort of over the hill. The movies were getting worse. His songs were not making the charts anymore. And he was really looking for a reinvention and a restart of his career. It kind of started with the 1968 comeback special on NBC in December 1968, which sort of reintroduced Elvis to the American public. And then in the summer of 69, the Colonel decided that he would return to live performing and that they would do it in Las Vegas.
You know, and the sad part is that people don't remember that, really, how great it is. That's why I think this book is so great. Eddie Murphy used to do a comedy bit, and it was very funny. It was an impression of Elvis. He said how much he loved Elvis. And then when he gets old and fat, and people associated that with Las Vegas. But in reality, that was a great time in Elvis's career.
Absolutely. That 1969 comeback show in Vegas, he was really at his peak as a live performer. He was trim. He was energetic. He was excited to be back in front of his fans again. He was so frustrated not being able to perform live for those last few years. And then he went out and created an entire show from scratch, picked a backup band, put together the set he was going to do. And he was just as good as he ever was. And I want people to remember that. Yes, later on in Vegas, the shows got more bombastic and Elvis gained weight, and people sort of identified that image of him, the overweight Elvis in the white jumpsuit with Vegas. But at the beginning, I want to remind people he was never better and a dynamic, powerful stage performer.
Yeah, and what was cool about that, too, was he was really at a high point in his career. Vegas before that was kind of known as a place where you kind of went when your career was at the end. Now, the Rat Pack were a big deal then, but they didn't take it seriously. They were joking around. He did take it seriously. That show was well done.
Right. And yes, you're right. Vegas was Vegas was going through its own changes in the 60s, or having its own troubles. At the beginning of the 60s, with Sinatra and the Rat Pack, Vegas was certainly the hottest place for live entertainment in America. And everybody was there, all the nightclub singers, all the comedians, the dancers. But as the 60s went on and the music scene started to change, the Beatles, the counterculture revolution, suddenly Vegas was not so cool anymore, and the younger generation was not coming to Las Vegas, and the rock groups were not playing Las Vegas. So Elvis coming there was a big deal, because he kind of brought rock and roll onto the big stage in Vegas, really for the first time. There had been some rock and rhythm and blues people who had done Vegas during the 60s, but mostly in the lounges. But Elvis showed that a big rock concert-like show could work on the big showroom stage. It was a different kind of Vegas show. It was not the old, sort of more intimate nightclub-style show that Sinatra and that gang did. It was a big show in a big showroom, twice as big as any other in Las Vegas, at the brand new International Hotel. And so I think it sort of was the beginning of a new chapter in Vegas entertainment.
Everybody talks about Vegas residencies. Lady Gaga now is a big thing. Before that, of course, Celine Dion. He was the guy that started this, though, right? Because people used to look forward to it and always sold out.
Yeah, right. His show, first of all, was 4 weeks, 7 nights a week, 2 shows a night, not a single night off. Who does that anymore?
Wow. But
you know, for 4 weeks to sell out every show, he was, it was the biggest show that Vegas had ever seen. And it showed, it also brought in a different kind of audience. It was more people from a more middle American audience, people who hadn't necessarily been to Vegas before. They came to Vegas for Elvis, and he made the Vegas show an event, and also an event for the whole family. I mean, for a much broader audience, not the sort of traditional, sophisticated nightclub crowd. So that was the audience that Vegas would eventually discover. It took him a couple of decades, but when Vegas went through its own reinvention later on with the new hotels and the Cirque du Soleil shows, and then, you're right, the new residencies, starting with Celine Dion, those were, I think, really Elvis was the first of those kind of shows. And those shows, of course, much bigger productions and in big, big auditoriums, big showrooms. But Elvis was the first one to really do that kind of show in Vegas.
And he may be the savior of Las Vegas because as gambling has taken over all over the country, to compete, Vegas had to do it differently. And you can see by some of the arenas they're building, Richard, this whole idea of what Elvis did, bringing people in for the show, has kind of taken over.
Right. And making the show an event, you know, Elvis's show, after that comeback engagement in 1969, the International Hotel signed into a 5-year contract, the International, which later became the Hilton, and he would come back every 6 months for 4 weeks at a time. There would be the summer engagement and the winter engagement, and people, it was the first time really somebody had a regular kind of schedule in Vegas, so people knew they would plan their trips around Elvis, and I think that is kind of what the new residencies are now. People come for Lady Gaga or for, you know, Sting or Aerosmith or whoever. They're you know, back in the old days, in the early 60s, in the 50s and 60s, you'd come to Vegas and just whoever was playing. You know, there were so many people, you know, it was just
right.
So packed with stars. You just come, and if Sinatra was there, fine. If he wasn't, you'd go see Sammy or Tony Bennett or Buddy Hackett. But later on, when the stars sort of thinned out, and of course, in the 80s and 90s, the headliners kind of went away or were certainly in eclipse compared to the Cirque du Soleil spectacular kind of shows and the Siegfried and Roy's. But now that they're coming back, there are fewer of them, but they're more of an event. And so people are kind of looking to the particular show that they want to see, and that's what they're organizing their trip to Vegas around.
Yeah, and I see Lady Gaga getting thousands of dollars for some of these seats, Aerosmith as well. One wonders what Elvis would have got had this been in this economy.
Yeah. Back then, in 69, he got $15 for a ticket, which inflation-wise, that was pretty high back then because Vegas had traditionally, of course, charged very little for the shows. The whole idea was to get people into the shows so they'd stay and gamble in the casinos, and that's where the hotels made their money, and that's how they could pay the top salaries in the country. But Elvis's show was reputedly the first one to actually make money on its own because it was a huge showroom compared to the others in Vegas, and so they didn't need necessarily the big gamblers. They just wanted people. It was a volume business. So Elvis kind of turned things in a different direction, turned the business model around.
And again, I think it's fantastic that you kind of change people's ideas about Elvis, because in that time, you were mentioning, I forget how many, two shows a night, all those 7 days a week. He had to be in incredible shape to do that.
Right. right. And he had a great, you know, backup group. And he did this all on his own. He a guy who hadn't performed for most of a decade. And he's going into Las Vegas, creating a Las Vegas show. He didn't really have a director or a producer with any hands-on involvement. He just, you know, with a couple of friends, he just decided to he chose a backup band. He hired James Burton, one of the top guitarists, and they, together they picked the rest of the backup band. Then he wanted not one, but two backup singing groups, male and female, a male gospel group and a female soul group, the Sweet Inspirations, and then plus an orchestra, the regular house orchestra, which was bigger than usual, more than 40 people, and so there were like 60 musicians on stage. It was just a huge show for Vegas, and this was all Elvis's doing. The Colonel Parker, originally when he thought of bringing Elvis into Vegas, he was thinking of a kind of traditional Vegas show with showgirls around him and dance numbers, and Elvis said, no, this is what I wanted. Do he had in mind this a big rock concert like show for the big showroom.
And he also was kind of expanding his music. For a while there, he was in those movies, and they're doing the songs specifically written for the movies and so forth.
Sure.
Now he's doing In the Ghetto and some of those other songs,
right,
that were pretty different for him at that point.
Sure. He was starting to record. That was there was a recording session in Memphis the previous January where he recorded. It was his probably the most important recording session of his career. He had not been doing, you know, his songs of the 60s were not, not much. They were kind of very lightweight pop movie songs and a few other things, and they weren't even making the charts anymore. So he goes to Memphis in January, and he records songs like with a whole new group of songwriters and backup musicians, and he records In the Ghetto, which was a song written by Mac Davis, interestingly enough, and he records Suspicious Minds, and he records Kentucky Rain, and these were the kind of big emotional ballads that became a fixture in his repertoire. He introduced Suspicious Minds. He had recorded in January, but he had not released the record. That was the kind of climax of his show in Vegas, a 7-minute version of Suspicious Minds, with Elvis just all over the stage, knocking himself out, sweating, out of breath. And but nobody had heard that song before. That's where he introduced the song. And they released it right at the end of his Vegas engagement, and it became his first number one hit in 7 years.
It's incredible. Let's talk about his early days, because we can't forget that. He went to Vegas in the 50s, and it didn't work. What happened?
Yeah. Well, the reason I was surprised to find that out right at the beginning, I started writing this book as a kind of a book about Vegas's golden age of entertainment, and I found out that Elvis had such a long connection with Vegas that I didn't really know about. Starting in 1956, when he was just coming up, he had one hit number on the radio, a Heartbreak Hotel. Hadn't even done the Ed Sullivan Show yet, but he was starting to get a lot of attention on TV, and the Colonel decided to put him into a Las Vegas show in 1956 at the New Frontier Hotel on a bill with Freddie Martin's orchestra and Shecky Green, of all things. Well, this was not a kind of show that the Vegas crowd in 1956 had any idea what it was. They just see this kid shaking his hips from Memphis, and he didn't do very well. The reviews were very mixed, and it was not a success. But Elvis loved Vegas. First of all, he discovered a song there. He went to see a lounge group called Freddie Bell and the Bell Boys, who were doing a rock kind of version of Big Mama Thornton's song, Hound Dog. And Elvis loved it and put it in his own show, and that's when he recorded Hound Dog, and that became his signature hit. And Elvis loved Vegas. He would come back there often. It was like his favorite getaway. So all through the 60s, he was in and out of Vegas, seeing shows, picking up showgirls, just having fun. He made Viva Las Vegas there, of course, in 63. He married Priscilla there in 67. And so when it came time to return to live performing, Vegas may have been an odd choice to some people, the rock and roll crowd, but to Elvis, he was very comfortable there.
And fittingly, if you go to a Vegas Golden Knights game or whatever, the music tends to be kind of a hip-hop range and dance music and stuff, but there's nothing like the song Viva Las Vegas. It's almost the official song of Vegas.
Yeah, I know. That was the, you know, that became the iconic Vegas film. I don't think it's a great film by any means, but that song just sort of perfectly captured the spirit of Vegas. The movie is good because as a travelogue of Vegas in the city,
right.
You really get a good glimpse of Vegas in 1963. You know, lots of scenes of the strip and the showgirls and everything. It is it's a fun movie to watch and a real time capsule.
Yeah, and Anne Margaret's always a pleasure to see.
Oh yeah, and that was the first time he had in his movie a real co-star who really held her own with him, and even upstaged him a little bit. The Colonel was always was very afraid that she was going to sort of steal a show from Elvis. But it's a great, great performance by Anne.
One last thing about the book, Elvis in Vegas. It's great for people to want to hear about Vegas. I mean, I was fascinated by just on the subject of comedians. And you're talking about when people like Bob Newhart, who at the time was considered extremely cool, had to change his act a little, which really kind of tells you about Vegas prior to Elvis's appearance.
Yeah, I did. I really think the book does two things. It's a story of Elvis and his relationship with Vegas, and it's a story of Vegas and how its heyday years and how it was changing, and what a great magnet it was for all the performers. As you say, you think of the Vegas comedians, the traditional lounge comedians, the Don Rickles and Checky Greens, and then you think of the Jack Carters, the sort of one-liner guys, But then I saw almost every comedian play Vegas. Bob Newhart and Shelley Berman, guys who were sort of the new wave back then, who were considered more cerebral kind of comedians, not typical Vegas comedians. Even Woody Allen played Vegas near the end of the 60s at Caesar's Palace. Woody, who actually, enjoyed doing Vegas, so even though he told me he was always disappointed he could never fill up the showroom. And his first gig at Caesar's Palace, when it was done, he felt so bad that he couldn't quite sell out the show. He offered to give back some of his salary, which has to be a Vegas first.
Exactly. Well, you know, Vegas is sort of an entertainment standard, if you think about it. I mean, Richard Pryor, one of the greatest comedians to ever live, and he said himself it was a place where he never really was able to truly be himself. So it's one of those places where it's one of those check marks of being a super-duper star.
Yeah. You know, guys like Richard Pryor and George Carlin, who were really the new generation of comedians in the late 60s, and they had no sort of empathy with Las Vegas, but they still played it because that was the place you had to play. That was a sign of success. So, even though they didn't feel comfortable there, they did Las Vegas, and then they kind of departed Las Vegas because that's when things started to change. College concerts and other arena shows were becoming the venue for comedians like that.
Absolutely. And then I guess HBO came the final thing.
Sure. And so then, Vegas was changing, and then the whole culture was changing.
This is a fantastic book. It's Elvis in Vegas, How the King Reinvented the Las Vegas Show by Richard Zoglin, who's a great author. Your book on Bob Hope I absolutely loved.
Thank you.
And where can we get the book, Richard? I assume everywhere.
Sure, all the bookstores, on Amazon, pretty much everywhere. There's an audio book and a Kindle and all that.
And do you have a website, too?
I do, richardzoglin.com. Easy to find.
We will go there. Richard, thank you so much. Really appreciate it talking with you today.
Great to be with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Make sure to follow Vegas Never Sleeps on all social media platforms, including Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks for listening today. This is Stephen Manchi reminding you, Vegas never sleeps.
Vegas, here we go!
Man, I had a rough night's sleep. Boy, whew, I got a letter from the IRS yesterday, and I just couldn't sleep. Man, I'm dying here. Somebody help me.
IRS problems affect more than just your finances. If you're ready to take back control of your life and you owe more than $10,000, you need to call the Tax Doctor. Their expert staff can immediately protect you from the IRS and state collectors and get you the best possible tax settlement guaranteed. The IRS has recently released new programs geared in helping struggling taxpayers, where you may qualify to settle your tax debt and wipe out up to 85% or more of what you currently owe. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call the Tax Doctor right now. See if you qualify to pay less.
800-520-0735. 800-520-0735. 800-520-0735. That's 800-520-0735.
Attention, those of you looking to go on a fun vacation and see the world on the cheap. Today, the U.S. dollar is worth even more in other countries, so there's never been a better time to travel outside the USA. The dollar is worth over $1.30 in Canadian dollars, and it's the same for Australia. You can fly there today and have fun and maximize your travel dollar. Your U.S. dollar is worth over $3 in Brazilian reals, and it's worth over $18 in Mexican pesos. Plus, in Argentina, it's worth over $27 in Argentine pesos. Just think of the bargains you'll get. And the way you get the cheapest airfare to any destination is by calling Tickets That Cheap. Save up to 75% on your foreign vacation tickets. Don't wait. Call now.
802-317-1980. 802-317-1980, 802-317-1980. That's 802-317-1980.
Holy Gentle Giants dog food, Batman! I'm Burt Ward, Robin from the Batman TV series. I was the Caped Crusader, and now I'm the Canine Crusader. After rescuing and feeding 15,500 dogs for 23 years, my wife and I created a natural, low-fat, heart-healthy, made-in-America dog food and special feeding and care program designed to help all dogs live amazingly longer, healthier, happier lives. Our dogs are living as long as 27 healthy, active years. Yours can too. That's twice their normal lifespan and triple for some breeds. Would you like your dog to live as long as 27 years and still be active and healthy? Gentle Giants dog food is complete nutrition for all dogs and puppies, all ages and sizes, and is different from other dog foods without the greasy coating and high fat content that can shorten your dog's life. Try our Gentle Giants life-enhancing dog food for the longer, healthier, happier life of your dog.
Does your drug addiction make you feel like you're in jail and somebody threw away the key? If you're depressed and scared to death about your drug problem, we can help at the Reset Addiction Helpline. Even if you've been turned down because of a high deductible by other places, we can help. At Reset, we have access to grants from recovering addicts that want to give back and help. We'll set your treatment up in a beautiful 5-star facility so your road to happiness and a normal drug-free life can start off right. Get out of your drug addiction jail today. Call Reset and speak with a recovering addict who knows what you're going through and how to help. The call is free, and I promise it'll change your life. We're here, so call right now. 866-490-3991. 866-490-3991. 866-490-3991. 866-490-3991.